Hello.
Hi. Hi.
Welcome, everyone. You are listening to a awesome podcast, I would say.
Yeah, you are listening to a particularly dangerous situation.
Oh, yeah. And I'm watching Brett's pupper be really cute. So my name is Brina, but you can just call me Bree.
And I'm Brett. And my dog is eating her own paw.
I think you're making her.
I am. I'm like, eat this here.
I feel like my throat's already sore from doing this once.
I know. So this is podcast number 2.
See?
Deuce. So we actually are doing the due diligence of a podcaster, which is record. So we are just going to do back to backs here until we get our shit ready to go.
Yes.
And we're also super excited about weather. Like, that's why we're here.
Yeah.
Why we're here.
I'm sure you remember from the last episode, if you listened, and if you haven't, maybe you should get on that, about our love of weather and our interest in weather and disasters and how things can happen anywhere at any time, and how they happen is incredibly interesting. Get those details, and how you hear vague things about some disasters, but not actual details. So we're here to give you those details.
Oh yeah, for sure. And that's sort of what we're doing here. You know, we talk about the crazy weather that's going on. And, you know, I mean, if you're kind of a self-aware person and seeing in this day of age, like what's going on, day of age, if you're aware, you know that the world is changing. We're changing every day, every second, and they seem more and more frequent.
Yep.
You know, I don't know if I'm alone in feeling that way, but I feel like weather events, and that's what we're calling them these days, is a weather event. So if it's not something that's considered ordinary, it's extraordinary, and it's a weather event, it's happening more and more often. And because of that, I feel like, and one of the reasons why I think Bree and I decided to start this podcast was like, man, we got to make ourselves aware of this. Like we talk about it, we see it every day, but like, we're not really acting on it. So we're hoping that this podcast brings people to action to be like, hey, this weather is not normal. Let's take care of this shit. Cause we've got one planet, folks.
And me and Brett, I would agree on the fact that you can't always do anything during or after, but sometimes you can do something for before, and that's preparing. So we're also here to encourage you to prepare. Tomorrow's too late, buds. So do it today, even
do
a little bit.
Do it now.
Do it now as much as you can.
Get on it.
So oh, I'm so excited. Do you know what I'm talking about today?
I have no idea.
All right.
Oh my God,
today,
so excited.
Today, oh my gosh. I am really excited about this because I live in Pacific Northwest in Portland, and this is a common conversation for everyone up here, mostly of it happening soon. So today I'm covering the 1700 Cascadia earthquake.
Oh, bitch, no. Okay.
Yes.
All right. There you go. Hit home. See, this is why I have a bug out bag in the first place.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, too, because I just did Vanport, and apparently, I don't know what it is, but currently I have a very particular interest
strong
in the Pacific Northwest. So that's what it's starting with. Don't worry, not all of my disasters will be. And we were talking about weather, but some of these won't be always weather-related, but there's always going to most likely be at least one weather-related incident. Yeah. And while earthquakes are not weather-driven, they are part of Earth.
I don't know. I actually disagree with that. I think that earthquakes are considered weather. Like,
really?
it is an atmospheric event to an extent. Like, not atmosphere, like up in the stratosphere, whatever, but like, it's part of, so the Earth's crust, in my opinion, is part of our atmosphere. So I think it's a weather event. That's a personal opinion, but
I think everyone should give me their opinion.
I agree. Like, tweet us, tweet us. Bree, what's our Twitter handle?
PDS Podcast. It's pretty dangerous. Pretty dangerous.
It's pretty dangerous.
It's particularly dangerous situation, you know, like an acronym. So PDS, P as in a particularly, D as in dangerous, S as in situation, podcast.
Yes.
And that's Twitter and Instagram.
Yes. Tweet us and let us know if you think that earthquakes are considered atmospheric events, or weather events. Do you consider earthquakes weather events? I do. And that's personal. I think it is.
So. And I think that includes volcanoes too. If you think volcanoes, yep. And there's, I think, other things like that, avalanches, landslides.
Yep.
So, yeah, which they're definitely geological events. To give you a little background about Cascadia, Cascadia is kind of like just generally the Pacific Northwest. It goes generally depending where who you are, you might have a different vision of what you think Cascadia is. But when we talk about here, we're talking about the Cascadia subduction zone. So you're going to learn a few things we do not already know about earthquakes. And I'm not going to lie, this stuff is my jam. I think it's incredibly interesting. And I am so down to tell you the goods about this.
Yes, girl. Yes.
If you don't know what a subduction zone is, it's actually where, as you know, hopefully, and if you don't know, you'll know, our crust is separated on tectonic plates. That is how we went from originally as Pangaea and split up and moved everywhere. Our land moved everywhere. So sometimes those plates, a lot of the way that earthquakes happen is those plates are hitting each other, or in this instance, being subducted. It almost sounds like seductive. Like,
seduced. They're being seduced.
They're being seduced, and one's on top and one's on bottom.
Oh, yeah, girl. So, it's a little action.
So you have, us on land, we're on top.
One's on top, one's on the bottom.
And the one that's in the water is going under our plate, but it's not continuously going. So right now, why we haven't had an earthquake really, or like big ones, is that it's holding. So as it holds, it gets more and more tense.
Yep.
And so that tension and that power grows over the years.
So pretty much there's a lot of sexual tension in the ocean and land.
Yes. Thank you. Great. Great.
Totally.
Exactly. And then
we're like teenagers. Perfectly, they're pretty much like teenagers until parents leave the room.
And then that tension grows and grows and grows until I almost knocked over my thing.
Microphone.
And that is when the earthquake happens.
Yep.
I hope that was a very educational metaphor there.
Yes.
The Cascadia, the subduction zone, goes from North California about Cape Mendocino. Yeah. Up to
Mendocino.
Who's like, is it a boy or a girl? And up to North Vancouver Islands, Canada. So it's a pretty long zone there. Currently, we're talking about the earthquake that's going to happen. And part of that is because this subduction zone tends to have an earthquake an average about every 500 years or so. Mm-hmm. So this was the last one that we know of, and you'll see why we know of it, that happened in 1700. So it actually happened. They finally figured out January 26, 1700. And I'm going to go through some details to find out how they know this happened.
I was going to say, like, do you have, like, did they have that on record? Because that's a pretty long time that they, like, I'm assuming that it's just sort of in some kind of like annals that they had in local records and blah blah blah, not that they were actually recording weather at that time, because I feel like recording weather only came about in the 1800s.
So I think that's really great that you brought that up, because there are no written records from United States or Canada that this happened at all. The closest that we have to any kind of written record is from Japan in 1700, because they got the tsunami from the earthquake. So earthquake happened, the tsunami hit Japan 10 hours later. And since they could estimate how long it took, that's how they know it happened January 26th at 9:30 PM.
Oh shit.
1700.
So yeah, this is just proof that Japan has always been ahead of the game.
Oh,
science.
Yeah.
And
still are.
Still are to this day. Damn, that's incredible.
Right?
Wow.
So this is going to be a little bit interesting because as much as I want to talk about what actually per se happened from the earthquake, well, I'll talk about some things that resulted from the earthquakes and then how we know proof that we have that this earthquake happened, because there were people in this area, but they were all First Nations and Native Americans. So we'll kind of touch that in a few seconds. So this earthquake, they predict, was between 8.7 to 9.2 magnitude.
Ooh.
I was in a 6.1 magnitude earthquake, and that was intense. And when you get, I'm not 100%, but I believe as the magnitude gets higher, also does the length of the earthquake can happen. So yes, this earthquake could possibly be between 10 to 30 seconds.
Wow.
So the hard thing is like, what's the difference between 8 magnitude and 9 magnitude, right? I always thought it was like a 10 times difference.
I would think that like it would shake the shit out of you versus shake something so intensely that it'll fucking break. Pardon my French, but like it'll break. I feel like anything over an 8, actually, I feel like anything over a point, like a 7 or a 7.5 would start to break structures. This day and age, I know that they actually do due diligence and try to make it so that they can withstand up to, I think, a 10 point whatever. But I still feel like if it's a 9 or an 8, you're going to feel it. You're going to straight. I've only been in a 3.8 and it was about 10, 15 miles away at Alum Rock. Mm. And I was in San Jose, and I remember feeling distinctly, I'm sitting at my desk, and I'm not joking, I literally got shoved 2 inches. And I was like, whoa.
Oh, wow.
What was that? And my friend's like, everybody ignored it. The best part was that everyone ignored it. Mm-hmm. And then they all, like, 10 minutes later goes, oh, did you feel that? And I was like, I thought it was crazy. I'm like, I just felt like it was shoved, and all you guys are just acting like it was normal. And they're like, oh, no, that's good. That's just a burping. Like, you want the earth to burp, because if it doesn't burp, then it has the big one. So, interestingly enough.
So, I think the metaphor that I think of, if it doesn't burp, it's going to have food poisoning and go out on both ends.
Oh, honey, I am so nervous because, not joking, the last year and a half, we've had nothing. The year before, we had little burps. Like, we had a couple at 2 in the morning, and the lights were swinging, and I woke my cat up, and like, then we had 2 at work, little burps. And my coworkers were like, oh yeah, this is normal. This is what we should have.
I mean, to make you even more scared, even with the burps, the big one can still come, which is kind of scary because it just depends how much tension's built up.
Exactly.
I can tell you that when I was in that 6.1 or whatever, buildings did fall. They were older buildings, but a lot of our downtown, I lived in a little town, a lot of the downtown fell. Yeah. So I looked this up, and Life Science gave me some information about between each magnitude to kind of help people get an idea. And thinking even about the one that you're in, say you start with a 7.0. The difference between a 7.0 earthquake and an 8.0 is that 8.0 is 33 times stronger than the 7.0.
Jesus, that strong?
Yeah. So then when you go from an 8 to a 9, that 9.0 is 1,089 times stronger and powerful than that 7.0.
I wish you could see my face right now, guys.
It's pure like shock / dizziness in the headlight. Yeah,
it's abject terror. What?
They get huge. Just like such a difference between like.
Oh my God.
So having a 9.0 magnitude earthquake, like, we're going to find out what happened with some of these stories.
Yeah. Devastating.
And that's why we're scared of it now. And that's why retrofitting is so important.
Yeah.
For earthquake retrofitting. 100%. So thank God for Japan, because we have that proof that it happened about, I think, the 9 or 9:30, and they approximated, and Japan approximated it to be a 9.0 or about a 9.0, but we have that 8.7, 9.2, 9.2. Again, I am
8 to 9.
Yeah, 8 to 9. Yeah. I am kind of curious on the science behind that, because it's kind of hard, just out of like pure interest. Like, that's amazing in 1700 for them to be like, oh, I think it was this. So some of the different ways of proofs, and this is kind of one of my favorite, are several ghost forests, which is such a cool phrase. I was like, what is this?
What's a ghost forest? I like this.
Let me tell you.
Can we go there?
Actually, you can kind of go there. So we should be very thankful for Brian Atwater and Dr. David Yamaguchi. Because of them, they have done some research to find out when these earthquakes have happened. So ghost forests are pretty much the trees that were there during the earthquake. Oh, this is a big crucial part. So when that earthquake happened, the ground dropped 2 feet.
Oh, shit.
Which in New Zealand, when New Zealand had an earthquake one time, I want to say their like parts of their ground like dropped like 18 inches to like a foot to 18 inches or something, like something crazy to think of. They find these trees that the salt water pretty much eroded away, is from my understanding. And so when the tide goes into low tide, there's all these weird random tree stumps that are rotting and decaying. They went to some trees nearby that area and then did the tree ring dating on those, which is like every ring usually shows you a year.
Right, a year. Yeah.
Yeah. And like the width of the ring can tell you how much it grew in that year and give you a lot more details. And that actually has a name, which is dendrochronology. Actually, I think I do. So that actually has a name.
That's a thing.
So it's dendrochronology. I can't say it, but which is awesome.
Wow.
So when they did that, they were able to see that between the trees that were, because the trees that were the ghost forest were too decayed to actually age. They couldn't get to any rings. So the ones close by those, compared to the ones that are a little bit further out, they found out that it had to happen between 1699 and 1701.
Oh my God.
And they could tell by the rings that it was not a slow rise of salt water. It was
that it was a fast rise
event.
Yeah, actually. So the interesting thing is that they say the same thing about tsunamis on the East and West Coast, where depending on where they find certain sediment or particular shells or whatever in soil, that that's when that occurred. And this is how fast it happened. I'm amazed at that kind of technology. I think it's fantastic. There's weird ass seashells all over, all over Oregon. And I'm like, why is a seashell here? This is weird. This shouldn't be here.
There's actually boulders out somewhere in Portland that I visited with my geology class that came from like somewhere in the Midwest from a water flood that would happen every so often.
Right?
That may happen again.
It just happens. No big deal.
NBD. Kind of like an ice age, how ice ages happened. So actually, as you said, examining the sediment layers, that's one way that they knew that this happened. Because once again, they can date it. They took core samples from the ocean floor. Once again, doing some tests, aging. It's from different areas, blah, blah, blah. This is when it happened.
Gotta love science.
Of course, debris samples from our earthquake-induced landslides in Pacific Northwest. So this definitely caused some landslides, which we get to talk about. Again, and then archaeology research of coastal villages being flooded and abandoned. So there's a lot of history. So thank God for Native Americans and First Nation peoples, because they have been passing down, various tribes have passed down oral history.
Storytelling. Huge.
Yes, the classic how history was passed on. So I meant to look up how to pronounce these names. And
I was just about to think that you were just about to say, I really wish I was Native American.
Some of these stories, they all kind of mirror very similar events that happen. So the Hue Aunt, I'm so sorry if I'm pronouncing this wrong. they talk about a large earthquake and ocean wave that destroyed settlements in Pechina Bay and Masset with 75 sea levels and only community to be completely destroyed. And it was all during the nighttime. So it says was 75 sea levels. I think like 75 sea levels above. So Masset was 75 feet of sea level above and was the only community to survive the tsunami, essentially. It all happened at night. Kuakultul. Sorry. North end of Vancouver Island.
You tried.
Tell a story about a nighttime earthquake that collapsed all the houses in the community. I know these, like, it's one of these things that if I heard it a few times, I would probably forget because I'm awful with names, but they try to write down how to say it, I think, for that one.
Yeah.
Another one talks about another tribe that was in the Vancouver Islands is the Cowichan, and they talk about the huge earthquake that created a landslide that covered and destroyed the whole village. Mm. Maka from the Washington, from Washington, talk about earthquake at night that took a village with resulting tsunami. And then the Quile, I'm trying to do French now, apparently. please correct me after this episode, y'all. I'm
please,
so
please
open to it.
Reach out and just give us a verbal confirmation.
Sometimes it's hard to find how to pronounce these names too, because it's not on the normal pronouncing sites. So it makes it harder too. So they talk about how they were from Washington. They had a flood and it flooded the villagers, and the villagers were in the canoes, which were swept inland all the way to Hood Canal. Wow. I couldn't find out where Hood Canal was from Washington, but let's just say it's pretty damn far.
Really?
One of the group.
That surprises me. I would think Hood would be like, cause I'm thinking Mount Hood's close. So.
Yeah. But if it's water, maybe it's the water from off the coast to somewhere like Hood, but I don't know if it's Hood River, but it says Hood Canal.
Did you say Hood River?
I said river, but you notice Hood River. I'm glad you noticed that.
Yeah, I love you.
I know. You enjoy it. It's kind of fun because it's almost like who can catch these weird things I slightly say different sometimes.
Yes.
So always one of my favorite tales that came from this is actually Thunderbird and Well Myth.
Oh,
have you ever heard of this?
I feel like I have, but I can't remember how. I feel like somebody told me this in a bar one night, and I can't remember who or when, but it's very familiar.
I mean, so that so please, could make sense
please
on
elaborate.
The West Side for sure.
Yes. Yes. Please elaborate and let me see if it recalls.
I want to call it a folk tale, but the story is that there was a well in the ocean, and it was a very mean well. I sound like I'm reading a child's book. And this well was a complete monster and eating the other wells, eating all the other wells' foods and eating the tribe's food that's in the ocean. And so the tribe is getting super hungry and super starved because they can't get any food. Well, there's this Thunderbird nearby, which is like a majestic, mythical creature. Mm. Who sees this asshole well and is like, dude, this is not okay.
WTF.
WTF. So he's like, okay, let me end this. And he flies over and swoops in and grabs the wells with, I'm assuming, his like super majestic mythical claws. Yeah.
Yep. Yep.
And they fight in the ocean while he tries to get him. So that's, I think, part of the earthquake.
Yeah.
And then the Thunderbird finally... like fly, I'm like making fly motions apparently.
Right, you guys, for who can't see right now, Bree's actually flapping her arms.
The Thunderbird pulled the whale out of the water, and that created more waves. And after the Thunderbird lifts the whale, it drops it on the land, causing more shakes and continues to fight. And essentially, eventually, you know, the whale dies. But some things are saying that when the well fell, that was like thunder sound, or when the Thunderbird flapped its wing, it was thunder, like thunder and lightning. But I think they're talking about the earthquake, because if you don't know this, earthquakes can come with a noise.
Yes. Correct.
Which can sound like thunder. It can sound like different things. It depends what's around you, but it's really strange.
A plane taking off.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. And there are various ways to tell this legend, but they're all kind of similar to the same. Mm-hmm. Because of this earthquake, we got the Seox volcano, which is a young cinder cone. And actually, many of the volcanoes on along Cascade Mountains and volcanoes are because of the subduction zone.
And so that includes Rainier, St. Helens, etc., correct?
Yes, like that. You'll see a line. And where that line is where the edge of the ocean plate is hitting, like, the lava and stuff, like, hitting the heat.
Yeah.
The lip, yes. And it, like, comes up. And that's where and it also, like, pushes. Like, depending on where you are, there's different ways I can push land.
Yeah.
So, St. Helens erupting is going to be an interesting story one day for us to do. But it's so intriguing, like when you learn more about volcanoes and mountains and how they have to do with the plates, it becomes really interesting. Mm-hmm. And then the Bridge of the Gods. So we have a man-made Bridge of the Gods that many of us have driven over, but before that there was a naturally formed bridge, and this was from the Bonneville landslide that happened during the 1700 earthquake, and it formed this land bridge that was used by local Native Americans. And the name actually came from local tribes too, the Bar, or I almost said, so there's a bar here called Bar of the Gods. So I almost
said that Bog! Again. Oh my God, AJ and I always meant to go there.
So now that I realize where Bar of the Gods probably got their name has to do with Bridge of the Gods.
Makes sense.
So that's mostly the earthquake. If you live in the Pacific Northwest at all, you're pretty much here about the next big one on the daily. Yep. The fault tends to produce 8 or more magnitude earthquake. And like I was saying earlier, about every 500 years. And it is it's that thing where you can't really predict earthquakes. And
you can't prick it either. Nope.
But there has been activity along that subduction zone that you can kind of follow. Mm. And so my question to anyone that lives in this area is, are you prepared?
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah. Yeah, mostly.
Do you have your preparations? Do you have a flashlight that's working? That's the key. Do you have a flashlight that's working? Because almost everybody has a flashlight.
Yeah.
Is it actually working?
Like in your bag?
Yeah, you never know. Clean water, put somewhere.
Yes.
Either bottles of water.
One thing that me and Brett completely agree on is that we want to tell you about ready.gov, which we'll try to remind you every episode that if you have any questions on how to prepare, what to do during and what to do after an earthquake. I feel like we were going to add it in the podcast, but I think it'd just be too long every time.
Yeah.
So go on ready.gov.
Ready.gov.
And they have different advice for different types of disasters, but they also have great information on emergency prepared kits as well, and where to put them and what you need. And if not that, at least have an evacuation plan. Where are you going to meet your loved ones or your friends or whoever it is? Write down numbers on a piece of paper, have them with you, and have your network outside of that area. So for example, I will be probably having, me and my husband will contact either like one of sets of our parents outside of where we live, because it's easier to contact people outside. So we'll both call a point person and check in through there if we can't find each other.
Agreed. Yeah. So always have emergency numbers on hand, and make sure you have chargers and battery packs. Not a plug whatsoever, but I have this really cool Anker.
The Anker?
Anker.
I say Anker.
Anker.
I have an Anker battery too.
I have an Anker battery, and this thing is legit. For $30, it's totally worth it. It saves my life when my phone is dying. So, always have a charger and a cord in your bag at all times. Yeah. And then, of course, in this day and age, you want to make sure you have a bug out bag. So, again, ready.gov is an amazing, amazing source. So,
yeah,
for sure.
And not, again, like it's not a plug, but Anker, my battery pack is from Anker too. And I have many other items from Anker, and they're a pretty amazing, reasonably priced company that produces really great tech items and electronic items. So if they would like to sponsor us, we're more than happy to.
We are more than happy to be your sponsor.
Yeah. Or you be our sponsor. We'd be more than happy to do ads for y'all, because we both very much.
I don't know how well you can prepare for the situation that I'm going to talk about, but you can do your best. And I feel like one of them is not living in China or Florida. Just kidding.
Intrigue.
So much intrigue. One of the things I'm going to go over is sinkholes. And one of the reasons I want to do that is because of the most recent floods, which tends to be sort of a precursor to sinkholes in a lot of situations. Now, not all of them.
But I didn't know that. Okay.
Not all of them, but it is a precursor to a good handful of them. From a website called conserve-energy.future.com. Wow, I fucked that up.
Do you want to try it again? I can keep it, or you can try it again, or both.
Just keep it, or like just bleep it out. I don't know. So that was horrible. It's conserve-energy-future.com. Wow. That's a mouthful. But a common emotion in many novels is wishing that the ground would open up and swallow a person whole. While it makes for great literary drama, it can be terrifying. The same happens in real life. So they're found all over the world. They're especially common in Texas, Alabama, Missouri, Kentucky, Tennessee, Pennsylvania, and Florida. Now, I don't know if you know, but a good chunk of those city states, whatever, are usually sort of founded on this sort of loose ground, for lack of a better term, where there is water or there's aqueducts that they didn't know of, or there's just holes because, like, Pennsylvania, for example, I think the sinkhole thing, this is just speculation, but I think the sinkhole thing is definitely loosely related to the oil digging.
Mm.
And, like, you know how they did for natural gas? And they do the whole natural, the fracking. And when they do that, they open pockets. And when you open a pocket, I'm sorry, it's a pocket. What else is going to happen? Shit's going to sink at some point. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that's my own personal thought. And then, of course, Florida is just an entire swamp. I'm sorry. Florida is a swamp from north to south, from tip to tail. It's a goddamn swamp and it's going to fall into the ocean at some point. Okay. It's meant to be part of a swamp. It's a swamp. One of the most intriguing pictures is on this website at conserve-energy.future.com. And it shows this picture of a sinkhole that is in the middle of a city and it's cavernous and it's almost terrifying to look at. They can be natural. They can also be man-made. They usually occur to erosion and it's because of underground water or other external reasons for erosion. They usually take a long time to develop before they actually show up. So it's like when a sinkhole occurs, it's usually not like, oh my God, this is the first time I'm seeing, you know, this kind of shit happening. It's because something's been longstanding going on, as in like erosion of the area or development of the area or whatever the case may be. But it's not something that just happens like overnight. It appears to happen overnight because the actual sinkhole itself occurs that quickly. It's the making of it that takes quite some time.
Okay.
So what happens basically, so in the case of erosion, the dirt, rocks, minerals, etc., they sort of like make way for like water to kind of seep through the little open spaces. And correct me if I'm wrong, meteorologists and other people, but basically it erodes.
Geologists.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And over time it'll erode. The amount of water increases and then it just affects the structure of the land in general. And then it breaks away and then boom, you have a sinkhole. Okay.
Damn.
There are human, again, so they can't be man-made. Again, drilling, mining, construction, water pipes, drain pipes, compacted soil, excavation issues, heavy traffic even can create large or small sinkholes. So it is possible for man-made issues to create an actual sinkhole. In this particular website, it says that areas that have bedrock made of limestone, salt deposits, or carbonate rock, they are actually more susceptible to sinkholes, which I didn't know. And when rainwater passes through these particular areas, or they actually pass through these areas going through plant debris, the water becomes more acidic. And over time, it actually starts essentially breaking down that soil.
Oh, okay.
And then it just starts to erode. And then at some point, the water or the structure in which the quote unquote road, land, home, whatever it is that's there, just goes, yeah, I can't hold this anymore. Sorry. You know what I mean? And it just goes, poof. Shit happens and you have a sinkhole. That's my takeaway from it. Now, again, it says that, so on Wikipedia, it says that a sinkhole can be known as a C-note sink or a sinkhole, swallow hole, or dolling. They're interchangeably used. I've never heard
dolling. Yeah, me either.
In my life, but it's a depression or a hole in the ground, sometimes caused by the form or collapse of a surface layer. Most are caused by karst processes, the chemical dissolution of carbonate rocks or suffusion processes. So essentially, again, it's sort of like a chemical breakdown of the soil, right?
Okay.
Natural processes usually occur to surface drainage or from running or standing water, but may also form in high or dry places in specific locations that capture drainage and hold it in limestone cave. So I think this is where, so like it indicates that there's something called a Minye sinkhole. I think I'm saying it right. In Papua New Guinea, or there's the Cedar Sink at Mammoth Cave National Park in Kentucky, an underground stream or river may be visible across the bottom flowing from one side to the other. So you can actually see like an actual river flowing inside the sinkhole. And I was like, mm-hmm. Whoa, that's so cool.
That almost makes more sense to me.
Right. Exactly. I mean, when you're processing the idea of sinkhole, you kind of think and almost associate water to be like part of what the process is, right?
Yeah.
The artificial process is they collapse and commonly incorrectly labeled as sinkholes, they also occur to human activities such as collapse mm-hmm. from abandoned mines or salt cavern storage in salt domes in places like Louisiana, Mississippi, and Texas. More commonly, collapses occur in urban areas due to water main breaks or sewer collapses, or when old pipes give away, or they occur from overpumping and extraction of groundwater or subsurface fluid. Basically, they're just kind of doing their thing and the pipes break. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Apparently, the world's largest cluster of sinkholes was discovered in China. It says there's 49 sinkholes found in China, Hanzhong in northwest China. So they discovered a cluster of them mm-hmm. In that area. And some of them are almost 1,000 feet deep. So it's pretty significant. Like,
I feel like that looks probably this endless.
Endless. Literally endless, like a ginormous hole in the ground.
Is it going to hell?
It's pretty much a hole to hell. Like, that's happening. They did find that there's more than 10 different types of rare plants in primitive forests, as well as Chinese flying squirrels, unusual and distinct different Chinese flying squirrels in these sinkholes. So these sinkholes literally become like little microclimates, you know, they're like, I was like, what?
They become their,
Were they there before? Like, no, like it doesn't indicate
cave animals.
It doesn't tell you that it indicates, it just says that they're very well preserved because of how remote they are in China.
Weird.
So it indicates that they did a 4-month survey in the Qinling Bashan Mountains.
You're doing great.
Which are located in the Hejiang area of northwest China's Shaanxi province. There's 49 sinkholes clustered in a 230 square foot mile patch of land within the 2,000 square foot miles surveyed, which is a freaking lot of sinkholes, okay?
Yeah.
And they noticed that there was several species of rare plants and giant flying squirrels. And they're like, oh my God, this place is essentially creating its own microclimate. So pretty fascinating. Let's see. They indicate also that in China, it's the most beautiful sinkholes that they've ever seen. According to sinkhole experts, and I'd love to meet this person. So Mr. Randall Orndorff, if I'm saying your Randall Orndorff. If I'm saying your name correctly, please reach out to us and tell us more about sinkholes, because I am immensely intrigued by sinkholes. I think they are probably one of, next to tornadic activity, the most fascinating geologic event in history. I think sinkholes are just crazy, incredibly interesting. But it says that he told National Geographic that a sinkhole is basically any collapsed or bowl-shaped figure that's formed when a void under the ground creates depression into which everything around it drains, which to me is Florida, like the entire state of Florida. You have an ability to have shit underneath you just collapse because you're built in a swamp. You know what I mean? So I wouldn't be surprised if all of Florida becomes a giant sinkhole. They can open gradually or rapidly. They swallow buildings, vehicles, they cause death. There is no advance warning. That's the caveat with sinkholes, is that there is no advance warning. There's no advance warning technology. We just don't know. You can guesstimate, mm-hmm. especially if places like Florida are overrun with moisture, or if you know that there's an overabundance of traffic in a certain area and you know that that's a potentially dangerous situation, particularly dangerous situation.
Every time we do it.
Every time. If you are in Pennsylvania and you know that this particular area has been drilled, you know what I mean? You have the potential to have a sinkhole occur. Mm-hmm. But without the advancing technologies, it's going to be difficult to know when they surface or when they collapse. It's just not possible. They are, however, according to the National Geographic site, preceded typically by cracks or slumping. So there are sometimes indicators of an actual sinkhole about to occur. Landslides are often mistaken for sinkholes. Not the same thing. Not the same thing.
Totally doesn't seem like the same thing.
No. There's not. Now, a landslide may go into a sinkhole, but mm-hmm. a landslide is not the same thing as a sinkhole. A true sinkhole will be a void that's underneath that things outside are filling. So I've actually seen footage of sinkholes occurring in Florida in small lakes. So all around South Florida, and my parents, and I know this because my parents lived there. Mm-hmm. My parents lived in Boca Raton. And at a time when I was down there, there was all these little man-made lakes or lakes that naturally occurred in and around the, there was a Everglades, there was a Okeechobee, like a trail that was along my parents' place. And like right along there was like a creek essentially. Mm-hmm. But there was always these like little bodies of water everywhere you went. And there was neighborhood. So you have like all these really great apartments and in within the neighborhood, there was like a little inlet. And then there was like this like little body of water. Right. And so several videos online and viral videos at that, that showed little like, what the, and now I can't
whirlpool?
Think of it. Whirlpool, little whirlpools are curling. And that's like literally a sinkhole where water is there because the water is now draining into said sinkhole. And I was like, oh my God, look at this. It's a sinkhole. What? You know? So
yeah,
it was kind of sort of the same effect, but yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So super fascinating to watch. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. The most interesting thing is article on mm-hmm. the sun.co.uk that in the title of this article was Get Away from the Edge, the Deepest, Darkest Holes in the Planet, Including the Door to Hell and the Devil's Sinkhole. The deepest hole in Earth drops 40,000 feet below the surface. Okay. And it's below an abandoned Soviet experience or experiment.
Wow.
Experience. Do you want to experience it? No, not so much.
No.
Yeah. No, please don't. It's called the Mariana Trench. It's the deepest natural trench in the world. It's 36,037 feet down. That's how deep it is.
Wow.
You talk about cavernous. You know what I mean? You talk about, like,
yeah,
I'm going to throw a quarter down and see what I hear land. You won't.
No, you won't.
You just won't. They said it so good. So locals said that it goes so far down into the earth, you can even hear the screams of people being tortured in hell. Okay. So probably not true.
Probably just their imagination or some kind of weird phenomenon.
However, maybe echoing. I wouldn't be surprised if there was echoing going on from some people further down the trench. You know what I mean? Okay. So in Canada, you have the Diavik Diamond Mine. In the USA, the deepest hole is the Bingham Canyon Mine. In Turkmenistan is where they have the Door to Hell. In Belize, and I knew about this back in high school, the Great Blue Hole. I wanted mm-hmm. to dive there. I was like, oh my God, I totally want to dive there. I'm like a crazy person. in Chile, it's the Chiquica Mata Copper Mine. So these are like the deepest man-made holes in the world, I believe. The deepest hole in the world is the Kola Bore Hole. It's the deepest hole on Earth, and it's 7.5 miles deep. That's a little more than a half a marathon.
Like how?
That's pretty fucking deep. It was made as part of a Soviet experiment, which only stopped digging because the temperatures got too hot. Oh my God.
It had to be melting the drill bits and stuff. There's this.
Can you imagine? Can you just imagine? Like, that's, wow. So the interesting thing is they put stuff to scale here. Okay. So they said the door to hell, which actually the door to hell, I think, is a natural. It's 98 feet deep.
Mm-hmm.
The Burj Khalifa, which is in Dubai. It's in Dubai.
Okay.
Dubai. Yes. Burj Khalifa is 2,716 feet. Okay. The average skydive is 10,000 feet. Now we're still going. Mount Everest is 29,029 feet. The Mariana Trench, which I told you, which was natural, is 36,000 feet. The Kola borehole is 40,230 feet. So this is a man-made sinkhole that was created by the Soviets, like crazy, crazy deep. And like, I would never want to go 7 miles into the earth. I'm sorry. I just wouldn't.
Oh, no.
No, sorry. Nope. Not happening. The interesting thing is, so as I researched this, they talk about the deadliest dive site, which is the Blue Hole, which is in the Red Sea, and it's in Dahab, Egypt. The depth is 328 feet, and the death toll is actually between 130 and 200. While diving in the Blue Hole might not be dangerous, it actually is pretty lethal. It's got a unique feature that makes it lethal. So basically, around 181 feet, there's a rock tunnel that connects the sinkhole to something in the area called the Arch. The Arch is 85 feet long and believed to have been the reason that 200 people have drowned in the Blue Hole between 1997 and 2012. Several factors make it really, really, really deadly, okay? Part of it is the divers thinking it'll be easy because they're like, oh, it's only 85 feet. That's not that bad. But the water's so clear, the light at the end of the tunnel makes the Arch look a lot shorter than it really is. And there's constantly water flowing through there. So it actually makes your progress really, really slow. The famous death that a lot of people know about, or may or may not know about, is a 22-year-old named Yuri Lipinski, who took a video camera with him and inadvertently filmed his own death in 2000. I know, baby. Now, I'm not saying this to be like overtly like, oh my God, I love death and watch this. But
like insensitive.
If you are interested, it is actually video that's available online and you can actually see just how clear this water is and what this person was experiencing.
I feel like if people are watching this video, it's more so on what it looks like to get in there since so many people haven't seen it versus the end.
Correct.
Since, like, being they're insensitive.
They're not doing it to be insensitive. They're doing it to be like, oh my God, no way. What is this really like? So it shows him descending to the bottom almost uncontrollably. And he panics. He like literally panics and tries to fill this buoyancy compensator, but he's so, so deep. And the pressure is so intense, he can't. There's just no way he can get up. So his remains were collected the next day. They were just like, this is what happens here, guys. Like, don't fuck around with this area. This is the Blue Hole is a real deal, and it's not for an unadvanced diver, you know?
Yeah.
The other one that I was really super intrigued about was called the Gates of Hell. And so this is kind of like, so basically these two places are sort of a play on two things that I'm really intrigued about. One is water and the other is just a general hole in the ground. So it's like a twofer, you know?
Two for one.
It's a twofer. You're getting a twofer right now. The Gates of Hell. Oh, go, please.
Oh, I was going to say, when you're talking about the holes that aren't filled with water, I do wonder, like, does anyone ever bungee jump in those?
Oh,
I mean, they have
do.
To be really dangerous if they're not too wide, but.
Oh, no, honey, they do.
They have to.
They do.
So please send us any pictures or video of you bungee jumped in a sinkhole.
Yes. If you
swam, just had any experience inside a sinkhole.
Or just any experience watching a sinkhole. I mean, to be honest, like to be an outsider and like standing 10, 15, 20 feet and filming it from afar is pretty damn fascinating. It's just like, whoa, I'm just watching like the earth beat itself right now, you know?
Yeah.
And again, this is me and Bree, like just focusing on the earth, like doing its thing, We're not focusing on human tragedy. We're not, you know, we're not in any way glorifying like, oh my God, look at this happening. And like, yes, there is human tragedy involved sometimes, but we're more fascinated with the fact that the earth has the capability to do such fantastic, amazing, crazy, detrimental things. You know,
the earth is essentially able to swallow itself. Mm-hmm. Like that is insane to think that it's like swallow, like, wow.
It can end itself. We can end ourselves. Like it's not even we, it's not even us as a human race. The earth could do it for us, you know?
Yes.
And it's a scary, scary thought. And we're just kind of like, hey, we're out here to tell you guys like this can happen. Heads up, you know? So the other one I really liked, and this is kind of near and dear to my heart because it says it's a doorway to hell. And I'm like, oh my God, this is great. It's in Derwezi, Turkmenistan. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that incorrectly. Please correct me. it's 98 feet. And actually the death toll is thousands of animals. Sorry, Britt, like precious, precious, precious animals. But I'm not going to feel bad about some of these things because according to the article, it's a Soviet experiment that had unintended consequences. Scientists initially wanted to use the remote desert site in 1971 to drill for oil, but the ground beneath the rig collapsed. So fearing the spread of poisonous gases into the surrounding towns, the geologists intentionally lit the natural methane gas on fire, thinking it would burn off in a few weeks. Guess what? Surprise! That. It's methane gas, and it's not going to burn off because it's coming from the crust of the earth. So it's been burning continuously ever since and actively being encouraged as a tourist attraction by the Turkmen government. Surprise.
But I remember seeing this picture because I was looking at this recently. Yes.
I know.
I was like, why does this sound so familiar?
Are you kidding? Like, this is a tourist attraction. What the shit? This is why I am so happy it's still around. At night, camel spiders are attracted to its light and warmth and fall to their death.
Babies.
So sorry, but not sorry. Have you seen fucking camel spider? They're disgusting and they're huge. And go to hell. Go to hell where you belong.
I think they're literally going to hell. I think that's what's happening.
So basically, it's just literally a giant burning hole. The pictures are impressive, and it literally looks like a gateway to hell. Another one, which is pretty impressive, is the Satanic Sinkhole. This one is in Texas, about 400 feet from the opening, which is about 50 feet wide. Mm-hmm. It was formed by a collapse of the surface layer from erosion. And I think it's water erosion that probably made that occur. Three people did die from falling into the sinkhole. So it said one was in 1900, another in 1960, and the most recent in 1972. They were probably all assholes trying to be like, oh my God, look at me. I'm in the gates to hell, or like, I'm in the devil sinkhole. Look at me. So yeah, I'm not saying that that's exactly it, but still it is home to 3,000 bats during the summer. And they actually come out around sundown and just kind of thrill the people. So it's actually a pretty cool little tourist site. The next deepest, the Deadly Diamond Mine, is the Kimberley Mine, also known as the Big Hole in South Africa. We're just going to call it the Big Hole. It's 700 feet deep. It was excavated by 50,000 miners with shovels and pickaxes. So this was legit man-made. Legit.
Wow.
Between 1871 and 1914. 1,044 people died from tuberculosis and other sicknesses, but that's because they were miners and breeding and all the bullshit that was coming in from that. But now, interestingly, it's filled with water and it's just like this beautiful hole that people go and visit. So there's the deep blue grate. This is my fascination. And I've been fascinated with this since I was in the fourth grade when I was like, I'm going to be a marine biologist. And I learned about this thing called the deep blue hole. It's 400 feet plus deep. Three divers have disappeared in the hole. Two of the remains have been found kind of recently, But it's about 60 miles off the coast of Belize. And I've always wanted to go to Belize. I
want to go there.
Oh, my God. It's just supposed to be beautiful. I actually used to work with a guy who's like, I grew up there. I'm like, I hate you. Originally, it was a limestone cave that formed about 150,000 years ago. But over time, the water level, of course, rose as super awesome climate change does. Yes. And it flooded, and then it created a roof, and then it just like created this really cool little hole. It's considered what they call a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So it's a scuba diving spot that was made famous by Jacques Cousteau in the 1970s. Now, that is legit, no joke, hand to God, where I heard about it first. My dad used to make me watch Jacques Cousteau documentaries when I was in elementary school, hoping to impress upon me the importance of science. So I'm not joking when I tell you my role model when I was little was Jacques Cousteau. Like, I was a huge, huge fan. So his family members that are carrying on his legacy right now, I love you all and I still follow you. You're amazing. And please reach out, because if you want to take me for a little dive in Belize, I will happily go, because wow. I have been fascinated.
I feel like your dad should know it worked, by the way.
Oh my God. He should. He knows. He knows. He totally knows. Pit itself of the deep blue hole is over 1,000 feet wide, 400 feet deep. And it is home to really cool reefs and bull sharks. It's kind of like a little haven. And this sinkhole is legit. Like, it actually does benefit to the sea and water. Mm-hmm. The next deepest is the Murder Mine. Kind of like the name. And forgive me if I'm totally pronouncing this right, but Chuquiamata Copper Mine. I know I'm pronouncing that totally incorrectly. Nope. Calama, Chile. It's had countless murders amongst the workers and shanty towns around the pit. When it first opened, miners lived in the lawless shanty towns surrounding the pit, where murder was almost a daily occurrence. Awash with booze, gambling, prostitution, etc. Like, it was just a bad place for a fucking pit to be. Like, you don't want to put a pit next to a town that like is just like all about gambling, drinking, and prostitution. Just
we call it sex work now.
Oh, sorry, sex work. But yeah, it's unsustainable and just not active at this point.
It's like Sodom.
100%. I think it is. It might actually be Sodom. The next favorite one of mine is the Gigantic Cavern. It's in Utah, the Bingham Canyon Open Pit Copper Mine. I've actually been there and it's really fucking cool. If you have a chance to go visually, it's pretty astounding to look at. If you look at pictures online, it looks like concentric circles. Like, it's just all the way down. Now, it doesn't go deep into the pits of Earth, but it's pretty damn deep.
Yeah.
It's 2.5 miles wide and about a little over 1/2 mile deep. And it's just outside Salt Lake City. It's the deepest copper mine in the world. And it has been around since 1906. It's actually visible from space, y'all. Like, you could see it from space.
You can see it all the way out there.
And the most recent death at the site was in 2017 when Albert Lozano was exposed to toxic sulfur dioxide from removing debris from a boiler. So that was kind of like an inadvertent thing, but like at the same time, you're like, oh my God, like this happened. But it's pretty epic as far as like, you know, man-made sinkholes go, like amazing. So this one, the Toxic Chemical Lake, it's also nicknamed the Berkeley Pit. It's in Montana and it's 1,780 feet. So 1,780. Really, nobody's died, but lots of birds died because they're trying to drink the water and they're like, oh shit, this is bad water. It's an abandoned copper mine. And again, a man-made sinkhole. It was closed in 1982, but it's been filling with water. And because of what it was dug out for, it's filling with arsenic and sulfuric acid. So the birds are dying when they come and hang out in there. So they're trying to actually scare them away, which is good. But yeah, it's like, what the frick? The next one that I truly, truly, truly love, called the Iron Cliffs. It's also called or known as Red Lake. It's in Croatia. It is 1,000. 700 feet deep. The death toll, nothing happened yet, but people definitely risked their lives using slack lines across the freaking pit. It is one of the deepest sinkholes anywhere on Earth. The cliffs itself around there reach about 241 meters up and well below the water, where the water is. So people are really endangering their lives hunting around there. So y'all who do slack lines over this, stop fucking around. You're going to die. Just don't do it. No. Wow. Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a good idea, in my opinion.
It gets its name from the red color in the cliffs, which have been tinted with iron oxide. The slackline thing started in 2017, but the sinkhole itself is pretty damn impressive. The beauty of it is incredible. It's a tree lined. There's trees all throughout the sinkhole itself. And the sinkhole at the bottom has beautiful blue water. I know that I would pronounce the Croatian name incorrectly. I'm just going to call it the Iron Cliffs or Red Lake because the Croatian name is Crvenojezero. And I'm like, not doing it.
A lot of consonants in there.
Yeah. And then the last one I want to talk about actually is ironically named the Glory Hole. I say ironically. I don't know what I'm saying ironically. I just think it's really just don't call something a glory hole.
If you look up glory hole, otherwise you're gonna get a lot
of stuff you don't want to see.
Yeah.
It's the Monticello Dam. Okay. It's in the US. The only person who's died is a swimmer. And I think it was 1997. It's only 200 feet deep, but the really cool thing about it is it's a spillway. It's impressive looking. It's really impressive looking. It's designed to make sure the water levels in Lake Berryessa don't overwhelm the dam. So imagine if you have a dam and somebody just like, I'm going to put a big plug in it and then pull it down so it creates a sinkhole and then this water won't overflow the dam. It'll just come down this hole. Right. So kind of like a bathtub effect. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's what they did it for. But The interesting thing is it looks really impressive and it looks just like a crazy sinkhole. That's just absorbing like crazy amounts of water. It's a man-made, but it's pretty impressive in terms of looks. Don't go swimming out in it and don't fuck around in it because that would be dumb, but it's pretty impressive. Really, the whole thing with sinkholes is that there's lots of man-made and or natural sinkholes all around the US or all around the world that are impressive and that you can visit that are completely safe because they've been there for years and years. But in terms of watching out for what's going to happen for sinkholes to come, the things that you want to look out for are erosion, depressions in the grass and or ground. If you see a tilting or a shift or a sort of a gentle angle in a certain area that you didn't see before and you know that either water or loose ground is involved, then be aware and let somebody know because it could be a potential sinkhole. Especially if you're in the states that I mentioned in the very beginning of this podcast, because like those particular areas are extremely susceptible to sinkholes. Texas, Florida, there's so just sort of like I said, to be generally aware. And like I said, not all the time is there a precursor, but just recently. And one of the reasons I wanted to do this podcast is because about 2 weeks ago, I saw a viral video in, I think it was the US actually. I wanted to say Japan, but I think it was the US. There was crazy amount of rainfall. And then there was somebody who was taking video of like a little parking area. And it was sort of along like a little fence lined road and there was trees and like, you know, lights and whatnot. And then they just literally watched just swallow up cars. Like the whole thing just took a dive. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like how would anyone expect this? But there had been an immense amount of rainfall as a precursor to that. So I feel like as, you know, a citizen, you know, just kind of walking around doing your thing, if you know that you've had way more rainfall than you normally would, and you know that that's generally an unsafe structure, or you know, you happen to know the makeup of it, or you happen to know that's along the area of where they did fracking 2 years ago, or whatever the case may be, then just do due diligence and just kind of be safe, you know?
Better safe than sorry.
Better safe than sorry. That's
probably our tagline.
Also, duck and cover. Guys, duck.
Yeah, duck and cover.
Even in a sinkhole. you might float to the top.
It's like how run, don't run, duck, cover. Yeah.
Stop, drop, roll.
It all depends on what. Stop, drop, roll.
It does. It does.
It all depends on the emergency. Well, that's super crazy. This
so many
super interesting
types.
With man-made, all the different types of sinkholes.
Man-made, regular,
everywhere.
Out of nowhere. You never know. You never know.
I think I like to pretend in my head that like sinkholes don't happen in 100%. America for some reason, but they 100%. Do, and they're yep. a pretty common, normal thing. 100% yeah.
Mm-hmm. So there's wow. sinkholes.
So
there's sinkholes in a nutshell. Cool.
Yeah. Sinkholes of episode sinkhole. 2. What? All right, well, I guess let's give good thanks to everyone
yeah.
who's
thanks guys
listened to us this episode.
Yep.
And hopefully our other episode. If you haven't yet, please hit that subscribe button. It makes quite the difference. Yes. It can do rating and
please let us know if we misspeak. We do like to know when we make mistakes because we are legit armchair meteorologists. Meteorologists.
Yeah.
Jesus. This is what happens when you drink too much beer.
And that goes with pronunciation or facts or areas. We're more than happy. We will do corrections sure. in other podcast episodes if we need to or wherever. We're very open. Yep. This is a learning experience yep. for us as well. And that's kind of the fun. It's like when you have to do that presentation in front of the class, but we do it every week
and
on a podcast.
You know what? You're fucking wrong.
It's only happened to me once in high school, right? Oops.
Do I still get a
B?
B-? B minus?
You are more than welcome, and we ask you to follow us. You can see us on Instagram at PDS Podcast. You can find us on Twitter, also PDS Podcast. You'll see us retweeting some very interesting weather events that are going around the world, and we're trying to keep up also on tweeting any donations or fundraising 100%. Going on for disaster relief at the time. Through the links on Twitter and Instagram, you can get to our website, which is very fresh and new, so don't judge us. And of course, as always, if you want to email us, we're more than happy to hear from you, whether it's your story, a correction, or just want to say hey. You can find us through your email server to ours at pdangerous.situation@gmail.com. And that's P as if it would say particularly, but it's not because we want to make it shorter. So it's pdangerous.situation@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think,
I'm sorry, episode two, we did it. Engaging my dog and bone.
I'm impressed.
101 here. Don't swallow the bone.
Yeah. And don't forget to duck and cover. And I guess better safe than sorry. Yeah. We'll get that, you know,
cleaned up one day. Otherwise, I'm just going to chew her bone. Duck and cover.
Yes.
Bye, y'all.
All right, y'all.
Bye. Bye.
Six, six, six. So 666 miles between Portland and San Jose.
Stop it. Are you serious? You and I are the devil's number apart?
Yes. Maybe if we sell our soul, our podcast will get huge and we go on tour.